My mother had me memorize lots and lots of the Proverbs out of the Bible. And there were great rewards associated with learning batches of them together. If I got this whole section memorized, there was some great reward. And memorizing was easy for me, so I figured this was easy money. And I memorized a bunch of them. Now, this week, on two occasions, one of those proverbs, there have been several circumstances that have brought those proverbs to my mind, and so this one has been rattling around in my head all week long. It comes from the 16th chapter, one of the last verses. It says this. Put the slide up, if you would. There it is. A hoary head is a crown of glory if it is found on a man or woman who has walked the way of righteousness. A hoary head is a crown of glory if it is found on a man or woman who has walked the way of righteousness. And when I was a kid, I didn't know what the word hoary meant. But that wasn't part of the deal. I didn't have to understand it. I just had to memorize it to get the cash. So now I understand it means gray, or it means white, or it means silver hair. It's basically the color of old people hair. So what it's saying is old people hair is a crown of glory if you have walked a certain path. It's saying this. If you spent your life listening to the interior voice, if you've walked the path of discipline, if you've been part of the community of faith, knowing and being known, helping and being helped on the journey, something happens to you. You don't just become old, you become wise. You don't just become old, you become virtuous. Now, we live in a culture in which we think every day that we age, we lose something. We lose our youth. We lose the best years of our lives. And our culture has fed us that line of bad thinking for a long, long time. But this is saying, no, every day that you age isn't something you've lost. Every day that you age is something that you have gained. Because as you walk this way, you begin to transcend religion and you become attuned to God. You begin to hear and listen to the nature of the divine spirit within you, and it begins to take over and kind of crowd out this lesser self. The ego is put into its rightful place. It becomes a tool you use, not a masquerading self that pretends to be the real you. And as you walk each one of these days, you love. You love because God is in you and God is love. And consequently, you begin to see life through God's eyes. A hoary head is a crown of glory for those who have walked this path. And some of the Proverbs right around this one, right around 31, talk a little bit about what that crown of glory looks like. When you become one of these hoary-headed ones in this God life, you are much slower to anger. You begin to see a bigger picture that begins to transcend the pressing, clawing, demanding needs of ego. That makes you less hair-triggered. Begin to live with a greater dimension of self-control. You direct your ego instead of your ego directing you. And self-control, one of those proverbs right around there says, this is much more profound than the control of an entire city, because many people can rule cities, but only a few can rule their own lives. And so, a hoary head is a crown of glory for those who have walked the ancient paths of virtue. Today is not really a proper lesson. Today is more of a guide. It's a guide on how to navigate the announcements at NRCC. There are several activities that you're going to hear about in the announcement on any given year at NRCC, and my hope today is to take what can sometimes seem to be a disparate and unrelated hodgepodge of things and give you some boxes in your mind that you can contain those announcements and understand what's going on, because there is an underlying cohesion behind all those announcements, and there is a long-term objective toward which they are heading. The long-term objective is for us to have a whole bunch of hoary heads of honor. Our community's long-term objective is to be an elder factory, shaping and building and producing and pumping out spiritual elders. Hopefully some of us will get there before our heads go white. The long-term objective is that we live out our lives together and we don't just get old, but we make the transition from an immature mindset into the mindset of an elder, a wise one. The objective is that ours become lives of virtue, and that ours become lives of righteousness, and ours become lives in which the true self trumps the false self. Ours become heads of honor. That's a long-term objective. And here's the underlying cohesion. Here's what holds them all together. Our announcements, with the exception of things like the lost and found, they focus on the ancient paths of righteousness. That's what our sacred texts call them. And these paths of righteousness, they cluster into four categories. If you bring up the next slide, please. Communal, contemplative, learning, and serving. I want to start with quadrant three, the learning practices. This year, as in any year, you're going to be invited to several opportunities to learn. Case in point right now, every Sunday and every Wednesday, we have an opportunity to learn together. This is the spiritual practice that our society is most comfortable with because we think that knowledge is power. We think that information is really important, and I don't say that in any way in a disparaging way, because learning really is important. Spiritual communities have always been communities of shared experience, and learning has always been a very important part of that. We, for generation after generation, have practiced becoming hoary heads of righteousness by learning together, learning together. We learn how life works. We learn what it means to be human. We learn the way of the soul. We learn how relationships work. We learn how to balance the competing demands that our culture would put on us with the long-term demands that are more deeply rooted in our humanity. We learn together. We understand together. We apply that understanding to our lives. And when we do, something happens. We integrate what we learn into the way that we live out our days. We begin to think differently. We begin to act differently. We begin to know the way of things, and we become wise. And so you will hear lots of invitations this year, as in any year, to one or more iterations of a learning practice. This year, you'll be invited to read the lectionary as part of your daily practice, to learn the ancient scriptures. If not, consider yourself invited now. I do this each day, and I would love it if I would join you. I use this app on my phone. Next slide, please. I really got to get my flipper fixed. It's Laudate 1.9.1. It's available on the Android. What it does, it brings up 4 to 5 scriptures each morning, and it takes about 4 to 5 minutes to read them. I spent a little bit longer there because it's an invitation to think some of these scriptures over, because sometimes these texts are really tough. Sometimes I have to puzzle over them. Sometimes they challenge my idea of God. Sometimes they're full of magical thinking that I just can't get my brain around. Sometimes they're stories of a mean God. Sometimes they're stories of a nasty God. Like this came up one day. God hardens some guy's heart, and then he turns around and punishes this guy for having a hard heart. And I thought, what the hell, God? I mean, come on. So sometimes we recoil from the scriptures we read. Other times we feel guilty for resonating with them. This happens to me on a regular basis because you will read through those scriptures a deep, sometimes yearning for vengeance upon one's enemies. Hurt my enemies, God, punish my enemies. And I would often like to say that when I'm in a tussle with Denise, hurt her, God. And we feel bad about feeling that way because we know it's not the Jesus way. One of the harshest of those comes up and says, this is what I want you to do, God. I want you to grab their infant children and I want you to smash their heads against the stone. Sometimes we recoil from what we read in those scriptures. But we learn. We learn about ourselves. We learn about them. We learn about a higher way. Sometimes we argue with these authors. Sometimes they speak our hearts for us. Sometimes they have an understanding that we don't, and sometimes we have an understanding that they don't. We are, after all, on this side of Jesus. We're on this side of emancipation and slavery and women's rights. We learn a lot. We have learned a lot that they didn't have the opportunity to learn, but we walk with these ancient authors and we learn as we do. But I know for some of you, the Bible is just like a landmine field, and it's very emotionally difficult because of your religious experience along the way that sometimes you are staying away. And if that's the case, that's all right. Next slide, please. You can go to our website, and there you will find several reading lists where you can read people who I don't think will push those landmines for you and give you exposure to other ways to learn. There are lots of reading lists there. Also, you can listen to podcasts that are spiritual podcasts. Also, you, as I do, might listen to scientists or to philosophers or to teachers, because in our quest for truth, all truth is God's truth. And on our search for learning, and we do that in a spiritual community, we do so in line with a great, rich tradition that has gone before us. We're a learning community. And so, in the announcements, you're going to hear invitations to learn all year long. Next slide. I started with quadrant 3 because it is integrated into quadrant 1, the communal practices. But interestingly, the contemplative practices are also integrated in the communal practices, and the service practices are also integrated into the communal practices. But in any given year, you're going to be invited to get to know people. There will be lunches. There will be discovery dinners. You've already heard about life story groups, and there will be lots of things like that. This current Enneagram module that we're doing on Wednesday evenings is doing more than I've seen in a long time to support people getting to know each other beyond the superficial level. It's one of the best things that I've seen us do together. And each one of these invitations has merit in and of itself, but you should know that there's a larger objective that is in mind as we're having these individual opportunities. Ours is a hope to invite one another into a very old way of being friends together. In Latin times, it was a specialized term. It was called spiritual friend. And you hear me use that term a lot, but what you don't know is that there's a tremendous amount of history and a tremendous body of practice that goes behind that term, spiritual friend. It meant then to be faithful to a very special set of very specific practice. Now, we've updated these venerated and old practices, and we call them breathing groups. And breathing groups is a distillation of thousands of years of hammering out a very special environment in which our souls thrive. But a breathing group is a very intimate thing, so it's not something that we can put on the schedule and say, hey, on Thursday we're going to organize breathing groups. It's something you must do for yourself. It's not something anyone else can do for you. And so I encourage you to be looking for an opportunity to get to know some people, so that you could potentially form for yourself one or more breathing groups. Here's how we talk about these ancient practices. We talk about them in three breaths. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe up. To breathe in assumes that you're engaged in one or more of the learning practices we talked about in quadrant 3. You're reading the lectionary. Perhaps you're doing Lectio Divina. You're reading a spiritual book, you're listening to a spiritual podcast, you're processing the lessons and you're applying them to your life, and you get together with 2 to 4 people on a regular basis and you talk about what you're learning. This is how conflict resolution is working out in my life. This is the self-awareness that I'm gaining This is what self-disclosure is doing for me. Here's what I did with my kids. Here's how it worked with my coworker. I'm reading Richard Rohr's latest book. Here's what I'm learning. I read this article on meditation. This is what I saw. And we get together and we talk about it. And when we do, we breathe in one another's knowledge. That's the way it's always been in learning communities. We breathe in one another's understanding. Hopefully, we begin to breathe in one another's wisdom, and we begin to strengthen one another and move one another forward. We breathe in. We breathe out. This summer, you're going to be invited to 8 Wednesday evenings on conflict resolution, and we're going to review together, and we're going to practice this message sending and this message receiving process. We're going to learn how to fight well, and we're going to learn how to get our conflicts actually resolved. We're going to find out those seemingly untenable arguments that we've had forever, ever actually can be resolved and how we do it, and you're going to learn a great technique, and we're going to practice it together, and we're going to have show and tell. We're going to have people get up there and do it for you. It's going to be wonderful. You're going to like it. But what you might miss is that this technique that we're going to learn together is rooted in the ancient practice of confession. Because confession, too, it turns out, is a practice of self-awareness and self-disclosure. And as our breathing groups become safe places, safe enough, we begin to practice self-awareness and self-disclosure with one another. Here's the darkness in my soul. Here's where I'm failing. Here's what's going wrong. And this, it turns out, is profoundly freeing for the human soul. It is profoundly healing for our souls. You'll hear a lot about breathing out as we get to the summer. And finally, we breathe up. Now, as I've said, I know that many of you have stopped praying, because your idea of prayer was so closely linked to an idea about God, particularly the idea of God out there, particularly the God who rewards those and punishes those. And as you lose that image of God, your idea of prayer was so closely linked to that image of God that when that image of God went away, your prayer also went away. And it is my hope to bring the gift to this community that we really can pray one for another. We do hold one another on our breath before the divine. We do hold one another on our breath before the Spirit of God, before divine life, before divine love, before divine wisdom. Now, those three breaths are incredibly intimate things. So you can understand why we can't form them the same way that we do these other events in the communal practices. It's not the same as saying, hey, come to a life story group. If you don't like them, that's okay. We'll just, it's only one night, you can try it again. But this is very intimate. So I do encourage you to participate in the things to which you are invited this year as a way of finding people that you might develop trust with, to come to the lunches, to come to the discussion groups, to come to the life story groups, to do the Enneagram panels, and give yourself exposures to others who are on this same journey. I hope you will take up the invitations this year to the communal practices to get to know some people well enough that you could form a breathing group for yourself and try it 3 or 4 times and fail at it 3 or 4 times until you are able to create that environment for yourself, because you need that environment. I need that environment. So this year, you'll be invited in our announcements to take up the learning practices. You'll be invited to take up the communal practices. And you hear all the time about Quadrant 3, about the contemplative practices, meditation, examinative consciousness, the welcoming prayer, solitude, and silence. If you've been part of NRCC for any length of time at all, you've seen this diagram. Next slide, please. You've seen all about the transforming power of meditation. Meditation and a basket of contemplative practices that go with it, it turns out, is one of the most powerful ways, and for the last 500 years, one of the most ignored ways, to put the false self in its proper place, in second place, and to allow the true self to emerge. So you will be invited to meditate through the course of this year. You'll be invited to the welcoming prayer, to examine to other opportunities. And next slide, please. If you're unfamiliar with how to meditate, you can go to our website and just go in and put to the audio page the search word meditation. It'll bring up more than enough information for you to get completely caught up, and you will know everything that we know about meditation, and then it just becomes an issue of practice. Okay, next slide, please. And that takes us to the fourth quadrant, to the service practices. You will notice that we are in the midst of a transition here at NRCC. We are moving from being a small church to being a mid-sized church. And because me personally, I could not grow any faster than I could grow, I resisted that transition for a long time. I was burned by big church thinking, and I was burned by big organized religion. And so I was the poster child for the expression, if you've been bitten by a snake, you're afraid of a rope. Because I made the association in my mind that if we were to get organized, that would be organized religion. I didn't realize that the two were not the same. And I kept on this way for us as a community for several years until some friends helped me see that this kind of thinking is really self-absorbed and a little bit narcissistic. Because our souls were having this wonderful healing experience as we got past our organized religion problems. And once we healed, something didn't happen. We didn't move to begin to open our hearts and our doors to others. And if you listen to Jesus even a little bit, you know that that just won't fly. So about 4 or 5 years ago, we started opening our hearts to you, the newcomers, opening our doors to you, the newcomers, and then you started coming. And that's when we realized how unorganized we really were. Children's ministry has been growing gangbusters, and they called 2 weeks ago and they said, oh my God, that was torture Sunday. They were scrambling to figure out how to handle 3 times as many kids while at the same time addressing the needs of our special needs kids, while at the same time making sure that we had the same loving environment that had been so important to our kids. And so we're working on becoming organized without falling into what was, for many of us, the troublesomeness of organized religion. But if you listen to Jesus, you know that it's not enough to get organized simply to serve one's own community. The mandate of those who follow him is to save the world. And when we hear people talk about saving the world, we laugh. We laugh because we think those folks are just a little bit out of touch with reality. We laugh because that just seems crazy thinking, and it makes us nervous when we hear Jesus talk that way, and so we laugh. That's what nervous people do. But that really is what the Christian life is about. Bring divine life to bear on the world you live in. Be salt to preserve the world you live in. Be light to illuminate the world you live in. That's what Jesus said. So, this year, you and your kids are going to be invited into this fourth basket of spiritual practices, the service practices. The teens are already packing meals with Angie at Leesville High School, and they're cleaning up a stream and getting to know one another as they pick up trash. They're volunteering at the food bank. We're getting organized for the purpose of serving our world. This year, Scott is going to relaunch the CityServe team, but because we'll be talking about more intimate connections with others rather than just serving the abstract concept of the city, we're going to change the name and call it the NeighborServe team. And you can participate and be part of the NeighborServe team. That will be one of the ways that you could participate in the serving practices. But if you don't, that's all right, because one of the roles that they're going to do is help coordinate all of us for opportunities to serve, to care for the hurting, to give of ourselves, to practice charity as we meditated and reflected upon this morning in worship. So those are the four quadrants, four baskets of ancient practices, and that should help you understand this hodgepodge of things that you hear during the announcements over the course of a year at NRCC. These practices have been around for a long time. They are the pathway to a hoary head that is crowned with glory. They're a tried and true framework to live our lives by and to get the life that you want and to get the life that I want. because we want to be learned. We want to be communal. We want to be our true selves. We want to be a world-repairing people. So I didn't grow up in the South, so I don't know anything about gospel sings. However, people who are in the South know what that word means. So I'm driving in the car with somebody, and they point out a sign where the church is having a gospel sing, and I ask what it is, and they tell me. If you don't know what a gospel sing is, here's what it is. Several churches, usually the smaller sized churches, get together for a great big event, and some group from within each one of the church comes as a representative musical group, and they sing. Maybe this church has got a quartet, or maybe they've got some people, and everybody comes, and there's this great big gathering together of several churches, and everybody roots for the home team, and everybody is part of something bigger than themselves. And as I heard this person described to me what a gospel sing was, my mind started thinking, first of all, we could never do that. But second of all, I started thinking, what an important set of human deep needs that touches. Because I begin to imagine what it's like to be part of a group that is small, but also to be part of something that's bigger than yourself. And so you gather with a certain regularity to be part of a larger group, while at the same time reinforcing the connections you have to your group while you're rooting for your musical group. And then I imagined young people finding boys to be interested in and girls to be interested in, and I imagined them doing that in a sense of a larger community where the older people are smiling as they're watching these connections being made, and I'm imagining people eating together and sharing ideas of how do you do that in your community, and well, here's how we do it in our community. And I imagined being deepened in a sense of community, and I imagined being part of something bigger than themselves, and I thought, what a wonderful set of human functions a gospel sing serves. And then I began to think about these ancient practices, and I realized that in essence is what this is. Our society is reinventing itself right now at a furious pace. All kinds of new configurations of relationships and all kinds of new configurations of political alignments and economic alignments, and the religion is in this time of great upheaval and change. And these ancient practices have been tested over a time because they touch a very deep part of our humanity. We wake up in lives, some of you were born in the 40s and some in the 50s and the 60s, 70s, some of you born in the 80s or 90s. And we live that decade and the decades that follow after, and that decade seems such a big part of our lives because it was 10 years of our lives, and how many 10-year segments do you get in your life? Not that many. And so we often think that we're reinventing reality as we wake up in these lives of ours, but we're not. We're living the same kinds of patterns with different configurations that they did 100 years ago and 1,000 years ago and 1,500 years ago. And there are things that are just deep parts of our humanity, and these ancient pathways have touched for years and years and years those ancient parts of our humanity. You are communal. You are a learning being. You do have a divine center that is touched through contemplative practice. And you become your truest self when you serve the world around you. These are the ways we were made. So this year, you will hear announcements that are invitations to say, you've got a busy, busy life because you live in Raleigh and you're an American. And you're probably too busy. And your society has probably done you the disservice of defining your worth by how busy you are. And we're going to be this quiet voice over here, sometimes the voice calling from the wilderness, saying, step aside from that. Lay something down. Quit doing something so that you can do this. Because in the long run, you're going to be on your deathbed one day. And it probably is going to be measured, that experience, by how much you participated in these things that touch the deepest parts of your humanity. So I encourage you this year Pay attention to the announcements. Lord, may ours be hoary heads of glory, crowned with honor, crowned with glory, and may this be true for our children, and may this be true for our grandchildren. May it be so among us as a community. In Jesus' name, amen.